My name is Richard S., and I'm here interviewing Vic G. at what AA was like when he came in. We're at the Salty Dog in Covington, Kentucky, and it's April 20th, 2023. Vic, what was a typical day like before you came into Alcoholics Anonymous?
Well, I was quite sick. I used to work real hard. I was always very compulsive. I was compulsive about work. Used to work long hours. Used to go to school, night school, and I didn't realize that was building up pressure on me. And when I came home from work, towards the last part of my drinking, now I turned into a closet drinker. So I would come home from work and have that first drink. And that was just to relieve the pressure of the day. And what I didn't realize was that first drink led to my second drink. The second drink led to the blackout. And I had no idea what I was drinking or how much I was drinking. I was in the program for 4 years before I actually accepted the fact of how much I was drinking, before I even knew I had a blackout. One day, going to the Russell Street Club, I used to go there at noontime, and a car passed me. And this lady rolled down her windows, and she hollered, "Hi, Vic!" And who it was Joni, a girl I worked with. And I started remembering back. And she came in one day and accused me of calling her up at night. And I said, "Jenny, I didn't call you up last night." She says, "Yes, you did." I said, "No, I never called you up." So she dropped it. She said, don't call me anymore. And so the next day, she came in. She said, "Vic, you called me again." And I said, "Joni, I never called you." And this went on for a couple days, and all of a sudden my boss came over to me and started talking to me about not calling Joni up anymore. And those things led to another. But I realized that I was drinking, I took that first drink, and then I took the second drink, and I realized that those things was happening after my drinks. I went into a blackout very fast. And I could have swore I had never hit a blackout when I walked into this program. Hmm. And since then, things keep on coming back. Even nowadays, things will come back to me about when I was in a blackout and when I was drinking before. I thought I was always a closet drinker, but I wasn't. I used to drink at the bars. I used to drink at the Game and Fish Club. And I can remember those long drives back home. And there was nights where, you know, I would hold my hand up over my eye just so I could see one set of lines. And it got so scary. And it really got scary to me. Because one night I was coming back home, it was on 27, and there's no lights on that highway, and it's dark, and I'm seeing two or three lines, and I don't know which line to follow. I wanted to pull off on the side of the road, on the medium of the road, and just stopped driving because I was scared. And I didn't know where the medium was. And I kept on driving. And God had to have been with me then. But those instances scared me so much. See, I was a professional. Or I was a banker. And I couldn't afford to get a DUI. And it just scared me so much that I knew my drinking had a lot to do with it. So I stopped. I stopped drinking outside. I started drinking in the house. That was my cure for that. But, you know, I can remember going into work in this cloud, in this fog, and not being able to think. And I know I had hangovers. But back then, I didn't know what was going on. Mm-hmm. Eventually, that job, you know, I got dismissed from that job. And see, all this came back to me years after I came into the program. It took me that long for my head to clear. And I've lost a lot of jobs before my drinking. When I came in, when I was in the care unit, I could have swore that I never lost a job because of alcohol. I could have swore I never had a blackout. All those questions I could have swore did not happen to me. And since I've been in the program and listening to other people's stories, these things come back. And I realize I did all those things. Ran around to the bars and everything.
What happened that you got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and how did you hear about AA?
Well, after I was dismissed from the bank, I went on a sabbatical. I got my fishing rods, I got my gun, and I was going on a hunting and fishing trip. And I got my bottle, my beer, and the car. And I took off, and I went trout fishing. I went down Fort Campbell, deer hunting. And I can't tell you what happened, but I was sitting in the middle of the woods. I was desperate. I did not know what was going on. I had sunk so low in my own mind that thoughts of suicide crossed my mind. And I was sitting in this little valley between the hills, waiting for a deer to come out. And the thought occurred to me to use that gun on myself. And it was a very strong urge just to end it right there. And I said, I don't want to die. I said that foxhole prayer, God help me. And through a series of things that happened, I got up out of that valley. I got to my car. I came back home. I'm a vet. Next day, I said, only people that's insane think about suicide. And I don't want to die. So I went over to VA hospital. I asked them if I could see a psychiatrist. And so they interviewed me. They asked me all these darn questions, the ones we talked about before. And I answered no to all those questions. And they said, Vic, we can't give you some psychiatric treatment, but we do have something for you that can help you. It's our alcohol clinic. It's across the parking garage, and that's available to you. I said, well, I'm not an alcoholic. And I said, when I drink, I only drink two drinks, and that's all I drank. And I actually believed that. My mind was fooling me so much, I only drank two drinks. And what was realistically happening, I drank those two drinks and went in blackout. And I could never remember those other drinks. But I was drinking a lot more. But they entered me. I gave up trying to get a psychiatrist. I said, I need help somehow. I gave in. I said, I'll go to your alcohol treatment. And they got me going to AA. They taught me about AA. They taught me about what alcoholism was. And they got me to my first meeting, which was Russell Street. And I can remember walking in Russell Street that one night. And Russell Street was probably open a couple of years before that. I opened that door, and this just cloud just poured out of the door of smoking. And I can remember the next day I told the nurses that there must have been 300 people in that room. And I know it doesn't hold any more than 75, but there was so much smoke in there I could not hardly see the speaker. But I went to my first meeting there. But through, I kept on going to the alcohol clinic as an outpatient for 2 or 3 years after that. But for some reason, I had in my mind, and I'm compulsive as heck, that I keep on going, but kept on going back to meetings. And I just kept on going back. And what kept me sober for the first 6 months I was in is the fact that I just didn't want to die. I knew I was that close with that shotgun. I didn't want to die.
What was AA like when you came in, or what type of meetings did you go to or did you enjoy the most?
Well, that's funny because, as I said, Russell Street was my first meeting or meetings. But I looked up, and there was a group out in Lakeside Place or that called the Hard Rock. Or, mm-hmm. And it was at Emmanuel Methodist Church out there, I believe. And I walked in that room. I may have went to other meetings. But this room was my kind of place. See, because I was a very important unemployed banker at that time. And I walked in that room and I looked around, and there was women with their fur coats on. There was guys with their business suits on. Larry D was there.
Really?
And I forget the other girl's name, but they were all dressed to the hilt, you know, like they were going to church, and it was on Monday night in the gym of the church. And I said, I'm at home, you know, because these people dress and act like I do. So I joined that group. That was my first home group.
You mentioned Larry D. Now, there is a Larry D. that started the first meeting in Northern Kentucky called the Covington Group. And I contacted GSO, and they sent me what records they had. And throughout the 60s, his name was there, I guess, when they supplied information about their group. And he was instrumental in starting the first addiction center in Northern Kentucky, which was Druggie House.
Right. Right.
I'll be darned. You met him. That's unbelievable.
Oh, no. He was part of my home group for for a while, I think Larry was alive for quite a few years after I started going to that group.
I never knew him.
Yeah.
Did you find any particular meetings, or did you help start any meetings during this period that you remember?
No, I didn't help start any meetings, but I went to a lot. My second home, well, at the Hard Rock group, they make me treasurer since I was a very important banker. And I was treasurer for almost a year. And they gave me the books, and they gave me a little savings book to put the money in. And they probably explained to me what to do with the money, which I never remembered what to do with the money. And they came to me about 7 or 8 months later. And they said, Vic, where's all the money? You're supposed to send it in. I says, well, I got it. It's in the savings account. But they fired me. Anyway, my second home group was the world famous Florence group.
Tell me about that.
With Tony D and all that group of guys out there was great.
That met on Friday nights,
right?
About 8 or 8:30.
8:30. Yeah. We had late meetings then. And I know at that time I was going to a meeting every day. And thank God I was going to a meeting every day because they got me. And I was going to a big book meeting on Wednesday night. There was a big book meeting out at whatever church it is. I used to go there. We used to go around and reading. And I was so sick at first, I couldn't even read. I would try to read, couldn't do it. But anyway.
Was there any particular meeting you went to meet newcomers?
No. I think I was sick for quite a few years before I got into the newcomers. I started going to the Saturday morning meetings, and we started having a lot of newcomers at the Saturday morning meetings, and some newcomers at the Florence. It took me a couple years to really get that fog out of my mind to where I could start enjoying working with new people.
Tell me about your experience early on with the steps and with sponsor.
Okay. Well, with my steps, I had quite a few sponsors. They're all dead now except for the present one. But I had a sponsor at first that he wasn't quite familiar with the big book. So he had me do a true confession. And which was actually a sexual inventory. But there was things in my past as a kid that was lodged deep down inside of me that needed to come out. I didn't want them to come out. I thought of them every day of my life until I came into this program. And when I took my first four step with him, I did that true confession. And I cried for 2 hours when that stuff came out. And that's what they told me over the care unit, you know, when I was holding those things inside of me, that they could see the tears come to my eyes whenever a particular topic would come out. But I took the steps then and just was working in the program. I had it was 6 months before I really accepted the fact that I was an alcoholic because I didn't want to be an alcoholic. I didn't think I was alcoholic. I could only remember those two drinks. And I was down Russell Street, and this daring old-timer came up to me one time after the meeting. He says, "Vic, if you don't think you're an alcoholic," he said, "why don't you take the test?" I said, "Gee whiz, they never told me there was no test for this." So I said, "What's the test?" "Yeah, I'll take the test because I wanted to prove I wasn't an alcoholic." He says, "Well, you go home and you take two drinks a night." He says, "You do that every night for 30 days. So if you drink any more than two drinks, you're probably an alcoholic. If you drink any less than two drinks, you're probably an alcoholic." But he says, "If you could stick that out, there might be a question there." And immediately it kind of made me a little mad, because here I'm in AA for 6-7 months, and this guy's telling me to go out to drink. But what it did do, it made me start thinking. And on the way home, I was thinking about what this guy's telling me to drink. And it come to me that I couldn't stop at two drinks. I could fail that miserably. And there in that car, I accepted the fact that I was an alcoholic. It was...
So, I didn't ask you in the beginning, but what's your sobriety date?
Oh, it's December the 14th, 1982.
Okay. And I know you were really instrumental in getting Promises Club started. Yeah. So what, other than that, and you mentioned you were treasurer of your group, any other service commitments or attendance to conferences, that type of stuff?
Well, the conferences, I forgot about Rule 62 and the state conferences, too. But I joined that group down Russell Street. There was a group of guys in the middle of the room that always made up. They laughed and they had fun in that room. I was always a little disturbed about them because I wasn't having too much fun. And I picked up and I joined that group. It was Tony D and a bunch of guys in that group. They started going to different meetings at night. And that's how I started going out to Florence, I think. But we used to go to Indiana State Conference over in French Lick, Indiana. And we used to do that every year. Go to the Lane Motel across the street from the main hotel in French Lick. And they had something like 80-some-odd rooms. And we filled up every room. We would rent a whole motel with guys from Northern Kentucky. And it was great. And we went to conferences in Chicago. I started going to conferences in the international. I haven't missed an international conference.
Really?
It's fantastic. But I went to Dr. Bob's house. But I got involved with those guys. Mm-hmm. I could see those guys was working the program. And it just wrapped me up in the program. The Tony D, I believe it was Tony D, or somebody, they started... We had the first Kentucky State Conference here in Northern Kentucky. Not the first conference, but the first one in Kentucky.
Might have been 1989, 1990.
Somewhere around there. But they got a committee together. They asked me if I would do the registration at the door, do the registration desk, be a chairman of that. And I said yes. And it was so new to the people in this area having a conference. because we didn't have any conferences in this area at that time. That was the first one. And so we were signing up. We was out Drawbridge motoring, and we had a room capacity of, I think, 2,300 people. It was a very big hall. So I kept on signing up people before the conference, during the conference. Crowds was coming in. I had enough staff where we were just signing them up, not keeping any count on the people that were coming. And we had something like 2,800 or 2,900 people registered there at the conference. And all of a sudden, I walked up and I seen the fire department, all these firemen walking in, and they was going to shut us down because we went way over the room capacity. And I can remember that they let us have our conference, but they stationed a firefighter at every door there to help people exit. But that was a lot of fun. And from that sprang Rule 62 conference. And I was involved in the registration of Rule 62 for quite a few years.
If I remember correctly, the first year or two, when you registered at Rule 62, you got a beanie with a propeller on top of it.
Right, right.
It's pretty hard to take yourself serious when you're wearing a beanie with a propeller.
I know. I found that in my house, that beanie, years and years later, that I got from that first Rule 62. We had fun.
Who were some of the people that was most instrumental that you remember in your sobriety?
In what, the conferences? Or?
Well, whether they were internet conference speakers or... which we listened, I know when I came in, we listened to a lot of cassettes, and that's one of the way the message was carried is I would listen to these cassettes in my car everywhere I went, and these were mainly speakers from the West Coast or up north, all over the country. We even had people from Canada.
Yeah, I used to buy those tapes all the time. I had great big collections of them, which I gave to you.
Right.
I guess the instrumental guys I like Clancy I. And before I ever met the fella, had met him many, many times. But before I ever met him, my present sponsor, Dick Age, he probably doesn't even remember this, but when I was sitting in the back of the room by myself, not in the gang yet, he handed me one of those tapes. And that tape just happened to be Clancy. And Clancy, what I heard on that tape was Clancy said, look who you're sitting around. Look who you're hanging around with. And I thought of that. I was sitting in this back of the room. And I looked around and I said, I'm not hanging around with anybody. And it really lit a light bulb. And here I was sitting there every day with my cup of coffee. I used to eat a sandwich. And I wasn't growing because I needed to get into the fellowship. I needed to get with people. I picked my coffee up. I joined that group of guys in the center of that room just because that guy handed me that tape. And I'm sure it was Dick H. But we started swapping these tapes back and forth, mass producing them. I produced a bunch of them. Dick did. And I asked Dick H. to be my sponsor after about three and a half years.
I was thinking of one time Tony gave me a cassette, and it had the first half of the lead on both sides.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Well, there were some strange things happening those tapes.
Yeah. Well, is there any, that was pretty much what I wanted to find out was what AA was like in Northern Kentucky, and you've covered that. Are there any comments you'd like to make about how AA has affected your life or something along those lines?
Well, it changed. That's the thing.
AA changed from what it was like when you came in to what it's like today?
Oh, no. The change in me. And, you know, after all these years, I still go to a meeting every day or more. And I sit down and I ask myself, why are you going to those meetings still? And is it because I'm afraid to get drunk? Partially. You know, I don't want to drink again. But I haven't really got that fear anymore. I know how to handle that. And it's partially that I want to stay sober. But it's the people. It's the fellowship. It's what I get. It's what I get out of a meeting. I can't tell you how many times that I sit there and watch a new person come in the room. And I watch these new people. And I watch them struggle. I watch them get sober. And I look for that little light bulb to light up in their eyes and that smile on their face. And sometimes I think that's why I come in the rooms for. Because I see that and it gives me joy and happiness. I just enjoy this program. I have developed a group of friends in this program, and we travel all over. We go to cruises together, go to Alaska. We meet all the time. Our wives are close. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one thing we talked about early, you and I talked about a few years ago, that I always questioned who I was and if people liked me and things like that. And I was trying to always be the best or whatever. And somebody, there was a party in my village, and they didn't invite me. And I always said, I wonder why they don't invite me. Is there something wrong with me? And that's the way I was thinking for a while. My mind goes screwy sometimes. And so I sat down with a pencil and paper and took an inventory. And instead of taking an inventory like we're used to about our faults, I took an inventory of who Vic is today. And, you know, I'm happy with who I am today. I don't hurt people anymore. I try to help people. I'll do anything I can to help somebody. I have fun, you know. And I wound up, you know, and that one time we discussed in the car that, and you said that we wound up to be the person that we always wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And that stuck with me because that's what this program did to me.
Okay. Vic, thank you very much for your interview. And that's all that I have.
Okay, thank you.